Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, welcome back to Hack the Entrepreneur. This is starting to be a regular thing with us. Thanks for joining me. I truly do appreciate it. My name is John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. Today's guest is the author of the Amazon best-selling book, Design for Hackers, Reverse Engineering Beauty. To be absolutely clear, though, he no longer considers himself a designer, and we do not talk design. He has worked as a designer, and then he wrote one blog post about design, and he was given a book deal. I guess he just ran with it. But prior to writing Design for Hackers, he founded design departments at two Silicon Valley startups, and he freelanced for clients like Odesk. He has also launched numerous other projects, most of which have kind of just fizzled. Since the debut of Design for Hackers, our guest has traveled the world, speaking about design and entrepreneurship, and he's been mentoring startups. He was in Chicago during this conversation, he's in Austin, Texas now, and on his way to South America for a few months. He's slightly nomadic, and he's super, super smart. Now, let's hack David Cadavy. I want to thank today's awesome sponsor, FreshBooks, not only for sponsoring Hack the Entrepreneur, but also for personally helping me fix one of my biggest problems. I am absolutely terrible at staying on top of my bookkeeping and accounting for my business. Now, rather than losing receipts and handing my accountant a giant box of papers at the end of the year, FreshBooks has an amazing app for my phone that lets me instantly take pictures of my receipts and sort them with the touch of a single button. FreshBooks is designed for small business owners and is the number one cloud accounting solution that helps millions of entrepreneurs and small business owners to save time and get paid faster. FreshBooks integrates directly with three things that I use every day in my business: PayPal, Stripe, and MailChimp. To start your 30-day free trial today, go to freshbooks.com/hack. And don't forget to enter Hack the Entrepreneur in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. Welcome to the show, David.
Thank you for having me, John.
This is my pleasure. I think this is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think so too. I love doing podcasts. So, and I like your podcast too.
Oh, thanks. Okay, let's jump right into it, David.
All right.
As an entrepreneur, because I know you're a designer too, but let's get entrepreneurs. What is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
For me, the one thing has been trusting that if I follow my curiosity, it'll lead me to the right place. I know that a lot of entrepreneurs, including myself, struggle with shiny object syndrome, getting excited about one thing and then moving on to another thing and kind of feeling like, why am I spending my time on this? I should be back doing this other thing. But that's something that I've tried to trust every once in a while, or tried to trust throughout my career. And eventually those things start to converge. And I think that's like where really magical things happen. And that's where you start doing something that is uniquely yours. So that would be it for me.
And is that something in your, say, career with entrepreneurism? Is that something you've always kind of had the knack to be able to just totally get rid of the shiny object and move from thing to thing to thing? Or is it something that there was one day where you're just like, I have to stop and just focus on?
Well, there's a little bit of both, right? Like the shiny objects get me all the time. And there's always some new thing that I'm excited about. Like we were just talking about microphones a second ago, because I suddenly got curious about video production and microphones. And so I like spent a bunch of time obsessing over that and getting a good setup so I could make some YouTube videos. And, you know, I didn't have necessarily a really great business objective for doing that, but it was something that I was curious about, that I was excited about. And so I went for it. And, you know, throughout my career basically started with me drawing in my room alone by myself, just drawing all day and like all the time passing and forgetting to eat meals. And then eventually I got excited about computers. And then, you know, those two things had nothing to do with each other. And then I ended up studying graphic design, and those things started to have something to do with each other. And then I started blogging, and then I started working for startups in Silicon Valley. And all these were kind of seemed like distractions a little bit. And then they all sort of converged one day when it came time to, when I got the book deal to write Design for Hackers, like all these disparate things converged. And suddenly I was presented with this opportunity that was, that really felt like, oh, wow, like this is the perfect thing for me to do. And I'm the perfect person to do this. And I can do this in my own unique way. But yeah, ultimately, after signing a book deal, that was in some ways like kind of a commitment device. I knew it was nice to have a publisher for that and to have a contract to force me to actually write the book, because I hate to talk about, you know, my work this way, but it was miserable, you know, and it was really hard, and you don't want to, sometimes you just don't want to do it, but you have to. But when you're done, it feels really good. So yeah, it takes a little bit of discipline, but it also takes, I think there's a skill required in learning how to listen to that curiosity and then trying to find ways to, all right, let's say I'm getting curious about microphones right now. Well, how can I use that curiosity in a way that's going to sort of, sounds like a buzzword, but I think it's important, synergize with my business. Mm-hmm. You know, I could start a podcast, or I could start doing more YouTube videos or something, and like, you know, try different microphones. So you have to be strategic about it, but I don't think it's all bad to have your brain go all over the place every once in a while.
Yeah, I fully agree. And actually, I think it's kind of almost necessary for entrepreneurs. And it's weird that it seems like a lot of us almost suffer from like ADD and stuff, like not in like a clinical sense, but in a sense that, I mean, we do just kind of go from thing to thing to thing. Sometimes we get bored with stuff and move on, or either delegate it out to other people to, okay, you run with that idea, I'm kind of done with it. That's how I find myself. I get super excited about a project.
Yeah.
And then I want something so bad, and then all of a sudden I have it, and it's like, okay, how about you guys take this and go with it? I'm going to go and now do something else. Cause I don't know, the thrill of the hunt, I guess.
And that's what makes us entrepreneurs, right? Is that I remember interviewing for jobs after college and just like nothing felt right. You know, it's like this job doesn't feel right. And also I don't feel right to them. And in part of it's just because they want me to sit and design logos all day or do newsletter layout all day, every day. And that's not interesting to me. I can do all these other things, but they don't know what to do with that. And then eventually you end up running your own business or doing something entrepreneurial, and you realize like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, because I can use all of my different talents and all of my different curiosities. And I can, you know, one day I can sit and do some accounting stuff, which is sometimes boring, but sometimes not all that boring. And then another day I can do a little bit of marketing stuff. And another day I can do a little bit of design. And I think that what you mentioned about delegating is a good way to take care of some of that scatterbrainedness. And it's something that I work at, and I quite honestly kind of need help with, is learning to recognize like, oh, I'm not curious and interested about this particular thing anymore, but it's important to my business, so I need to find somebody else who will do it and move on to whatever it is that I am curious about.
Yeah, I guess that's something we all have to struggle with. And I find it interesting though, because you're a designer, right? And you moved to Silicon Valley, you worked for a startup. Most people in your position would have stayed in that environment, and you could get paid really, really well. You could just get to work on really cool projects that are going out to possibly millions of people. It's pretty neat. It's pretty interesting. And also, it might have been in some ways easier, right? Because you don't have to struggle through to create your own. I don't know. I find it interesting that you didn't take that route and you were on that route. It's not like I could just say, well, I mean, you could move to Silicon Valley and maybe this would happen. So you were there and you left.
Yeah, I was there and I left. I know. I mean, I've realized that whenever there's some rational path for me to take, I ended up doing the complete opposite kind of. Well, actually, before I ended up in Silicon Valley, I was working for an architecture firm as a designer. And I was really interested in like, oh, being famous for being a great designer and winning awards and stuff. And And I did have some luck with that, like directly out of college, that was going really well, but it wasn't that satisfying to me. And then I got an opportunity to work in Silicon Valley, and that's when I sort of my introduction to entrepreneurship and to startups, and like that was really exciting and that was really interesting. And it gave me a lot of belief in myself, and it gave me a lot of belief in my own ideas, and it gave me permission to be well-rounded and to pursue all these different curiosities that I had. And even, you know, it's funny, even when you call me a designer, in my brain, I'm sort of like, what? No, I'm not a designer. Because that's what I was trained in. That's like probably the thing that I have the most natural talent in, but it's not what I do on a day-to-day basis. And ultimately, like at the very root of everything, at the very root of my existence, it's not necessarily like the most important thing. And I remember that in Silicon Valley too, when people be like, oh, hey, meet David, he's a designer. And in my brain, I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm an entrepreneur. What are you talking about? And then it just, you know, but it's, you have to listen to the observations that people make about you. And eventually I came to terms with like, okay, yeah, all right. I have something to say about design. All right. Like I know of a couple things about this. And, you know, that's how I ended up writing Design for Hackers. So yeah, I guess I was working for the startups in Silicon Valley, and that had its own utility as well. But eventually, as I started working on my own ideas and stuff, let's go raise a bunch of money to start a company that makes it so you can tap your phone and it'll say yo to somebody else. Not that there's anything wrong with that. First of all, I love Yo. I think it's an amazing, brilliant app. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's like, that wasn't interesting to me. I was more interested in my own artistic process and entrepreneurship as an artistic process. And I felt like the more that I shackled on other people and investors and things onto whatever it was that I was exploring, the more I took away any agility that I had. And so that was, you know, a big catalyst of me getting out of there, because it didn't feel like a place where I could, you know, sort of hole up with my own ideas and explore my own brain and try to figure out what was in there, which is what I ended up doing for 3 years before I ended up getting the book deal for Design for Hackers.
Right. And but entrepreneurship as an artistic process?
Yeah.
That's brilliant. I love that.
Oh, you think so? I mean, I almost feel embarrassed to say it because it sounds really trite and it sounds like...
I'm pretty sure that's the title of this podcast.
There's this sort of like entrepreneurship as self-help thing that is looked down upon, and entrepreneurship as art. It feels almost trite to say it. And there's people who are entrepreneurs who like, yeah, they go and they build like a multi-million dollar business and they can use all these methodologies like the lean startup and everything. And they can really like say like, all right, this is what the market wants. All right, that's what we're going to make. And that doesn't work for me. I've got to, there's like, this is what the market wants. Yeah. But do I think that that's fun? Is that interesting to me? Is that something that is going to like arouse my curiosity? And is it an expression of who I am as a human? And does it allow me to run a business that supports my own values and supports the lifestyle that I want to lead and the values that I want to have in my life? You know, all those are part of the equation for me. And that's what drives what I do. You know, is it going to make a multi-billion dollar business? Probably not. That's not my main metric, but I want to be able to follow my curiosity and to play and, you know, keep in mind also market forces at the same time and use entrepreneurship as a tool for self-discovery and as a tool for self-expression. And I think that it's an amazing, exciting time, unlike any other, when we can do that.
Yeah. And you said, so making $1 million business isn't your main metric. So is your main like business metric?
Well, making $1 billion business isn't my main metric. No, hopefully, actually, yeah. I mean, $1 million business would be nice. I hope that that's possibly in reach, but you know, maybe it's,
maybe it's not though,
but
right. But it's not your main metric. Like money is not the main metric, right?
No, it's definitely not the main metric. I mean, even as much as I've ever tried to fool myself that it was, if I look back at my life time and time again, it's always been like, if I have an opportunity to make more money, I end up doing the exact opposite. Usually it's almost like a deterrent for me. I like money. I don't have a problem with capitalism. And that it's just that, yeah, it's not the, you know, money to me is, it's an expression of value and it's a representation of value that can take so many different forms. And, you know, sometimes the thing that you're going to do that's going to get you more money is going to, it's going to take away value in some other form. And so you decide to do something else.
Yeah, no, that's good. And yeah, money, I mean, money to me isn't a main metric either. And I'm absolutely for capitalism and such. And I love to make money, but it's not the main thing. It's just, it's almost to a fault with me that I don't care enough about it.
Yeah.
I love my business doing well because it allows me free time to do things like this, like talk to you and create a podcast because I don't have to go to a job or worry about where the money's coming from. But
yeah,
at the same time, it's not my focus.
Yeah, it's not my focus. And it's, I mean, it feels good to make money. It's nice when it happens. But I also, I mean, I like to see the flow of other types of capital or of value when, like, you know, right now we're having this conversation and I don't know, there's not like any monetary, like concrete monetary value things being exchanged. But to me, there's a lot of value to it. Like I enjoy having conversations like this and sharing my thoughts on things related to entrepreneurship. And, you know, sometimes the length of maturity on these things is so long that something you do today cashes out for you 10 years from now or longer. I like to think of myself as like Amazon, you know, like they're constantly spending all of their profits on R&D. And I feel like I'm kind of always doing that, except for my R&D is pretty much like, well, what's interesting to me and how does that connect with what I'm already doing? And how can I use the money that I've made to do more exploring? Hmm. And it's just like constantly reinvesting in that curiosity.
It's a smart way to think.
Hopefully.
Okay. So I have a question that I've never been in this position, but I think you were, and I know a lot of people are in this position. So you don't consider yourself a designer anymore, but you were a designer. I mean, and you worked in Silicon Valley, then you moved to Chicago and you freelanced, mm-hmm. at least as far as I know the story, you freelanced just enough that you had to pay the bills and such.
Yeah.
But your focus was on creating a passive income or a business. So you didn't have to trade your time for money, right?
Yeah, you've got that pretty much right.
How do you do that? Like, besides just, well, I just did it. Because I know so many people in the markets that I'm in, either developers or designers, that want to. They see the passive income and they wish, but they're so bogged down working 40, 50, 60 hours a week.
Yeah.
And they get paid really well, don't get me wrong. And they have no problem, but they wish they could have a way or some sort of path they could create and follow to eventually get out of that.
Right.
And not have to always trade an hour for a dollar.
Well, the short answer, John, is that I was insane. I felt with such deep conviction, like the misery of working for other people and having my brain felt so constrained in that process. And that was so important to me that I was willing to do almost anything to try to get my brain free. That was all it was about, was like, let's just get the brain free. Like I remember having the sensation like, oh, there's thoughts in my brain that I can't get organized and I just need the space in order to make that happen. And I have to get this free. So that was what I wanted to do. So yeah, I moved from Silicon Valley to Chicago, you know, cheaper rent. I could get my own apartment. I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in Nebraska and I, you know, learned most about coding and the internet and everything through having these long winters where you're stuck inside and you're not going anywhere because there's 12 inches of snow on the ground. So believe it or not, I sort of felt like, man, I really just like want to go lock myself into an apartment during a really cold winter and figure out what this is in my brain. And so I had some money saved up. I cashed out a bunch of my stock portfolio. I spent a year wandering around San Francisco from cafe to cafe before I ended up moving to Chicago. And yeah, the whole time I was billing like roughly $100 an hour or something. I wanted to bill 10 to 12 hours a week. So I managed to get some Silicon Valley clients. I was working with Odesk for much of that first year. Not Odesk as a freelancer, but I was working. Odesk was my client for most of that first year.
Oh,
great. I mean, I use Odesk for hiring freelancers and stuff. I love that service. And so that was, and that happened like as soon as I moved, like Odesk emailed me and was like, hey, do you want to work with us? And I'm like, well, I actually just moved to Chicago. And they're like, that's cool. I mean, this is what we do. So
were you freelancing for them?
I was freelancing for them. Yeah. Through their own system.
Like through them.
Yeah, for them.
And then they approached you.
I wasn't freelancing for them at the time. I don't know if I had even heard of them at that time, but basically they found me through a blog post that I had written and approached me. And it was just like the timing was, I had this strong feeling in me that like anything I wanted to work on had to be something I believed in. And so there was a company that just approached me right at the right moment. And it was like, oh, you guys are going to help people work remote anywhere from anywhere in the world. Like, yeah, I can get on board with that totally. And so it was wonderful to have. They did business the way that Silicon Valley does business, where there's something unique about that I had gotten used to. And so when I, you know, moved to Chicago and started looking at maybe clients in Chicago, there was just a disconnect there in terms of the way that they thought. And so, yeah, that was a great client to have. So that was going on. And with whatever free time I had, I was trying everything I could think of to try to, you know, get some passive revenue going. So I tried to treat every dollar that I made passively, I tried to imagine in my brain that it was $10 or $100. You know, I tried to think about like, because that it's going to be repetitive.
Oh.
It's going to be something that far in the future is going to grow. So psychologically, that was like a little trick that I used. And so I experimented with like making stock icons on a Shutterstock. I tried to get iStock photo, but it was very competitive. I didn't get accepted in their illustration stuff as I'm not a dedicated illustrator. So I messed around with that. And then I looked at my blog and I had certain blog posts that had a ton of, that just had really good SEO on various topics. So I like built microsites around those and stuff. Yeah. So I just eventually built up passive revenue and kept exploring it. As soon as I built that passive revenue, my brain was free. Then I just kept exploring. And then when that book deal came, I was prepared to dedicate myself entirely to that.
It's a great story. I like it. All right, David, let's move on to struggles and failures, because now that we've got through all the stuff that went so well for you. So as entrepreneurs and as human beings in general, one of our greatest struggles is the fear of being wrong, making mistakes and failing. Can you think back to a time where you were completely wrong about a business decision and tell me how you got yourself through it?
I was always wrong. It was always slow being wrong. You know, I'm not a big risk taker in the sense of I'm going to do something super dramatic right now. It's usually like I'm very slowly messing around with a bunch of different things. And it's going at such a slow pace that it's hard to be wrong. But I guess I did spend, you know, during that first year that I was on my own and I was wandering around San Francisco from cafe to cafe, I did spend a good 6 months of my life working on a Facebook app that had no business model and also relied upon Facebook entirely. And I didn't know how to totally build the app. So I spent several months staying up till 4 a.m, working on putting together this spec document and looking for a co-founder to help build it. And eventually I somehow convinced this great engineer who now works at Google to build the app at a discount in exchange for some equity. And you know, I ended up paying him a couple thousand dollars. It wasn't much. I mean, it was a couple thousand dollars is a lot to me when I didn't have a job and spent, you know, got it built. The app was like getting users. It was going viral and stuff. And I still have the graph where you can see it going up and up and up. And then one day Facebook changes its API. And it just went just down the tubes. And they had changed their API in a way that was like the whole distribution, the whole way this app was distributed was through these profile boxes that were on people's profiles. And Facebook decided we're not going to have those anymore. So it pretty much killed it. Yeah, I could have, you know, tried to keep it moving, but I didn't have the core skills to fix it myself. And there wasn't revenue coming in and there was no revenue plan in sight. And it was also a lesson learned in terms of being aware of what sort of risks you're exposing yourself to with a particular business. So one of those risks being that you're building something entirely on Facebook's platform. So it just sort of, slowly let it die as I worked on other things. How did I get through it? I don't know if that's a clear cut question because I didn't really get through it. It just sort of was a mistake that I made. I was just very wrong.
Well, yeah, I guess. Well, I mean, you got through it because it didn't. Some people would make a mistake like that. And honestly, that would kill their whole entrepreneurship vision.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I can't do it. I'm not cut out for this. I just should go back yeah. to Silicon Valley and get a job and let other people run the business.
Yeah.
It literally, I think it happens every day in this world.
Yeah, I just took it as a lesson learned.
Nice.
And I took it as a lesson learned. And then it was funny. Like, I remember seeing a few months later, I saw some company with like the exact same business model that raised $1.2 million. Oh, and, you know, like my blood boiled a little bit over that. And I would like, you know, look around. Who is this founder? What is this person? What are they doing? But nothing ever became of them. So kind of look at it as, oh, that's goes to show that maybe it was good that. Because some people might have, they have like this thing with sunk costs or loss aversion where they're like, well, I've already invested so much time and effort into this endeavor. Like, I have to keep going. And I didn't have that type of reaction to it. From the beginning, it was more of like a therapy for me almost working on that because that was the first project that I worked on after I stopped working for other people where I... All I wanted to do was recreate the feeling of being alone in my room and having the time just pass by because I was in a total state of flow. Mm. That was all that I wanted to. I just wanted to recreate that feeling and I wanted to create something that was up to my standards. And I wanted to create something that I was proud of, that I could feel proud of. And I did. It was a quality app. Like, it worked for that little bit of time. And, you know, it didn't work out. It was a learning process. Could I have learned those lessons faster? Yes. We didn't have things like the lean startup back then. So, you know, it was just a bunch of people who had some technical skills, like throwing spaghetti at the wall, and those noodles didn't stick.
Fair enough. I find it interesting that you say that you consider yourself sort of risk averse and not one to take risks. Yet, I think people listening are probably... To lots of people, you've taken a lot of risks that a lot of people aren't willing to take.
Yeah.
And maybe you do it in such a level-headed, calm sort of way. It's not just like, let's go for it now. It's like you have this sort of methodical sort of approach. And so from the outside, it's like he's taken a lot of risks. Like what some people would consider risk. Some people think having a job is less risky than having a business, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I tend to disagree, but that's what people would think. So I find that interesting how...
Right.
How you view yourself, but from the outside, it looks actually quite different.
Yeah, I do view myself that way. I mean, I grew up in Nebraska. My dad worked the same job for 37 years. I didn't have entrepreneurial people in my life at all until I was maybe 25. And yeah, they didn't seem risky to me because of what I valued. The way that I saw the world, the way that I saw the world work was, I remember being a young professional working in Omaha and you know, my boss or everybody, old people that I worked with being like, oh, when are you going to get married? When are you going to buy a house? And all these things. And me thinking to myself, well, why? I'm 23 years old. I don't want to live in Omaha anymore. Why on earth would I buy a house? That would be the worst way for me to spend my money at all. The thing I want to invest in is myself. And that was everything. The way that I saw things working, everything else was secondary to that, was to find a way to make myself grow and to challenge myself, which was what I did when I moved to Silicon Valley. And everybody was like, oh, the traffic's terrible, the cost of living is going to be awful. And to me, it was like, no, this is going to expose me to great people. It's going to challenge me. And then eventually that wore out its utility for me. And then it was time to make the space for my brain to explore and harvest everything that it had gotten out of being in Silicon Valley. So, you know, then I moved to Chicago. And yeah, also, I definitely don't see working for someone else as more secure than working for oneself. Because, I mean, now I've got all these different skills to stand on as my foundation. I've learned how to run a business, and I've learned, and when you do that, there's no better way to be exposed to the harsh light of reality than to, you know, be completely responsible for making your living. And you can't blame anybody else for something going wrong. You can't say, oh, my manager made this dumb decision, or somebody I worked with is annoying, or you can't make excuses like that. Like, you've got to pay your bills. You've got to figure it out. And even if your server goes down because your host sucks or something, it's still your responsibility. It doesn't matter. You can't blame anybody. So I think there's no better way to like really see yourself than through entrepreneurship, and even more specifically, solopreneurship.
Well said. All right, David. It's 1 year from today, and we're sitting down and celebrating an amazing year that you just had in your business. Can you tell me what you did to accomplish that?
What I did to accomplish that was, and actually, I'm in this sort of mode right now. I'm on this podcast right now because I was tweeting out like, hey, I want to be on podcasts where I talk about entrepreneurship and not design, you know, because I'm in an exploratory phase right now. I'm in a phase where I've, you know, I can talk about and blog about design some more, and there's plenty of people who want to read about that, but it's not interesting to me to do that right now. What is interesting to me is to talk about the very process that I've gone through to have the privilege of being able to write about design if I want to, and have people want to read it, and, you know, to have ways of making money doing that. So I'm in an exploratory phase right now. So it's a matter of exploring, talking about what I think is interesting, what excites me, talking to people that are interested in the same things as I am, like I'm talking to you right now and all of your listeners, and then looking for the patterns. Where are, you know, who's interested in this? What are ways that I can help them? What sort of form might that take? Is that a book? Is that a course? Is that email course? And then testing that out, making little tests where I can say like, well, I think the people might be interested in this subject. I'll just do like a Google Hangout where I talk about that. And, you know, is that interesting to people? Get a survey. And continuing that process of these little experiments until I have some sort of way of feeding the business with money and in exchange for helping people. So that's probably the way that it would go.
Nice. Sounds like it's going to be a fun year for yourself and for the rest of us following along.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Nice. So we've talked about it a fair bit. It's been mentioned. Your blog, I think you celebrated 10-year anniversary this year.
Yes.
That you've been blogging.
Yes.
Can you just leave my listeners and tell them where they can find your blog and where they can find out more about you?
Yeah, they can find my blog at kadavy.net. That is spelled K-A-D as in David, A-V as in Victor, Y.net. I'm very active on Twitter at kadavy. Again, that's K-A-D-A-V-Y. And they can email me at david@kadavy.net. And if it's not too long and with too many questions, I'll try to do my best to respond.
Excellent. Yeah, keep the emails short if you want people to respond and help you. I've always said the 5 sentences or less.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that I'm interested in right now. What do people see that they think that I can help them with? Email me if you have any questions.
Excellent. I'll link to your blog and to your Twitter on the show notes for everyone so they can reach out to you. And David, thank you so much for coming on and sharing with all of us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks so much for having me, John. It's really fun to have these conversations. So thank you.
My pleasure. David, thank you so much for joining me. That was just a super fun conversation, and he means it. Reach out to him on Twitter. He's there. That's actually how we got this arranged. He was saying he wants to be on more shows, and he's been on my list of original 30 people I wanted on the show because he was recommended by a couple of my good friends that I trust their judgment on it, and I didn't know that much about him. But when he was like, I want to be on more shows talking about entrepreneurship, What do you think Johnny said? I got a show for you. And he was instantly on it. So he's on Twitter. If you have any other questions and want to follow up with him, or just go over there. Just tell him you heard him on Hack the Entrepreneur. He'd love to hear it. And just tell him what you thought of it. But he said one thing, didn't he? He did. He did. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
I was trying everything I could think of to try to, you know, get some passive revenue going. So I tried to treat every dollar that I made passively, I tried to imagine in my brain that it was $10 or $100. You know, I tried to think about, like, because that it's going to be repetitive. It's going to be something that far in the future is going to grow. So psychologically, that was like a little trick that I used.
And that's the hack. I absolutely love that, David. And I mean, you know, listeners, you know that I'm super, super into passive income. Passive income to me has reach. It has scalability. And that is it. So if I only make $10 tomorrow of passive income from the one thing I do today, that actually $10 should be thought of as $100, because it's true. It's going to continue on. And it's not that I just literally traded my time right now for dollars. And David, the way he was a freelancer and he's made that transition, and it's a hard, hard transition. I have lots of friends that are freelancers as web developers or designers, and it's a hard transition because you're always stuck trading your hours for money. And that's where it gets super hard, because you're always working so hard that you never get the time to then go and create passive income. But I think you have to make that time, even if it's an hour a day or a half hour here and there, because if you can create that money, it's not just that money right then. It's 10 times that money. I absolutely love that, David. And thank you so much for that. Again, it's been a lot of fun. I thank you so much, so much, so much for spending the time with me. And it's great. I love hearing from you. And I love that you're out there listening. Hacktheentrepreneur.com. If you haven't been to the site, come on, check it out. I've been blogging over there. I've been putting the show notes. It's a lot of fun. You can get on my email list, and we're having conversations every Sunday. I'm setting up my best hacks, kind of a cool little post I write, and I send it out. And then I ask for responses, and people are replying all the time. I'm getting lots of them, and it's great. It comes right to my phone. I can chat with you guys. It's a great way to just get to know who's out there listening. I truly, truly do appreciate all of it. As always, I've had a ton of fun today with this conversation with David and bringing it to you out there. Until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.